Wow. Hey, everybody. I want to talk to you about some really super important stuff. Every individual deserves respect and they deserve the opportunity to thrive. And today we're talking about special needs families. Special needs families exemplify resilience, love, and the power of the human spirit. I am absolutely thrilled, and it's my pleasure to introduce Leanne Pritchett with 2 decades of service in special education. She's more than just an educator. She's a beacon of hope and resilience for children with special needs and their families. She's currently serving as a teacher for the visually impaired, shaping a brighter future, one child at a time. You can find more about her and her invaluable insights on her micro podcast at swolecast.com/TheMissLeanne. I'll put that on the screen later so we can all see it and you can get in touch with them. I'll even spell it out for everyone who's just listening. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming the incredible, dedicated, and inspiring Leanne Pritchett. And here we go. Leanne, I am happy to have you on the show.
I am really excited to be here. Thank you. This is
Hey, I want
great.
to do something we haven't done in a long time. I just brought it back.
Okay.
Who do you want to do a
Yeah.
shout out to?
Oh gosh, there's so many people, but first and foremost, my parents and my brother. My brother's actually in the hospital right now. So hi, Lyle. Hope you're doing okay. He's tough time,
Excellent.
man. Talk about an inspiration. And just everyone and anyone who's going through a hard time. And a good friend of mine as well, who also has a podcast that's helped me through a lot of mental health issues.
I love that. Let's jump right into this whole topic of special needs. Okay.
Yes.
So I want
Okay.
to talk about you, and then we're going to jump into like your journey and all that stuff and how it makes things different and better for the world. Because I don't
Okay.
want to look at it as a disability. I want to look at it as something that needs care and can help people become more than what they already are. So
Exactly.
so how has like working with special needs children like reshaped your perspective on disability and ability?
Yes. It definitely has, because when I first started in 2006, you know, that word disabled, I didn't really think about it, to be honest with you. I just kind of went, yeah, okay, whatever. And as the years have progressed, I'm like, no, they're differently abled and they may have to do things differently, but that doesn't mean they're less than or less capable. You just have to find the way to make things work for them. That's all.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
so like give us an example of the what most people would see as disabled as the and you call it differently abled, which I think is really good.
Yeah. Okay. Gosh, I've worked with so many disabilities, because you need to have that label to get educational and medical services for the legal aspect. But okay, a prime example. I had a student with cerebral palsy and his arm would not straighten. It was hooked. So for instance, to grab things, right, couldn't be on the left-hand side. So we're like, okay, so we would position them on the right-hand side and we would do things with his arm he was able to use. So he could do things just differently than
Yeah,
others, you
I
know,
think that
but
makes sense.
yeah, things like that.
You know, it's interesting. I used to do karate, and I think people there's been many versions of the story where people have maybe one arm or one leg, so they can't do certain punches or throws, you know, that
Right.
people be able to do with their hands. But because of that different ability, people also can't fight with them the same way. So you can't grab their arm because it's like, oh crap, there's nothing there. What do I
Right.
do?
Yeah. You have to like physically readjust, right?
You have to
Yeah.
readjust. So it's
Yeah.
not always a disability, it's a different ability.
Yeah, it's just
So
a different approach.
yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this because that's like a fun moment, right? You know, it's like all of a sudden,
Yeah.
like, oh my God, I can't do that. Explain to me how like mental health or special needs families, how can they pivot around those moments of like shared laughter or fun, things that are different than most people don't see and can't do.
Wow. I'm not sure I'm totally understanding the question, but I guess like I always have them like glass half full, glass half empty type thing. You know, I'm like, no, your glass is half full, you know, and just really enjoy and relish the moments. Who cares what other people think? They're not you. They just see like the moment, like a certain time, but they don't see that your whole story or your whole process. So just be happy, enjoy it, you know, and just live in the moment is the biggest one that I tell people, and just really look at what they are doing, not what quote they can't. Do not compare to other people, because you know there's only one you. There's only one your child.
Yeah. Tell me about like
Yes.
Tell me about like maybe one of the ways or an unexpected way that one of these special needs children that you've taught, maybe they've influenced your peers, or they've influenced you, or the way that people think.
Yes. Okay. So I currently work with blind and visually impaired children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting people's notions of what they can and can't do. I have one student who, and a lot of my students are multi-disabled, like I specialize working with visually impaired, but a lot of my kids have other ailments as well. I have one child who has a tumor growing in his brain, and it's pressing on the optic nerve. And so a lot of people handle him with kid gloves. Oh, he can't do this. He can't do this. And I'm like, no, yes, he can. And he's really, really broken down a lot of their thought processes and their stereotypes, because all of a sudden, like, they were doing a class art project and it was like a mural. And my buddy drew like this really cool cartoon, and they're like, oh, he can do that? Like, just totally shocked. Like, I said, yeah. I said, I mean, he sees differently. I mean, like, he has like central field vision. So basically, like this much, this middle field, just the middle part, no peripheral. And he has huge color deficits. But my God, this drawing, like, it's better than some stuff you'd see in a comic book. It was phenomenal. And he broke down the stereotypes, like, wow. So instead of, oh, what he can't do, they then would focus on, oh, he can do this. Oh, he's really talented here, you know, and would really be more positive about it and be like, oh, okay. And wouldn't be like, automatically assume he couldn't do something. And they would include him in the conversation more, be like, what do you think about this? How, and they would ask him, because he's, this is a high school kid. So it's not like a little baby.
Yeah.
How can we do this? How can we make it work for you? And they start including him in the process, which helped his mental health, because he's like, oh, wow, I'm valued. Right.
You know, I totally get that. And I, the reason I can bond with that is because I've never been able to see well because I wear the glasses. And when I take them off, the only way I can see things is by color and shape.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so it makes a difference how you interact with the world. And I get that without a doubt.
Yeah. And the more valued they are by other people, it has a trickle down effect, because then the student feels better, like, you know, and they have better self-esteem. And then that comes out to the world as well, permeates out. So then they others who see him don't assume negative things because he's not reacting negatively.
Mm-hmm. So how does like teaching like visually impaired students, is that, how does it differ from like other types of special education?
Well, there is a vision aspect, obviously, because, well, a lot of education is based on sight, especially like, let's say you're in kindergarten, right? And they read a book, and even if the child doesn't understand the verbal part of it, whatever you're reading, they have the picture to look at, right? That's why there's always pictures in there to help them with the language process. So they're seeing things, they're hearing things, they're using all modalities. Now, with visually impaired, that can't always be the case. And especially, let's say, if you have a deafblind child, right? So they can't hear or see. I have a few of those, but it's more for me visually impaired. So they don't have their vision to fill in the gaps in a, not just for like a storybook, but for life skills. Because, or how do you interact with others? Because children are sponges, and they'll look at their parents and their caregivers like, oh, that's how I'm supposed to react when I'm upset with someone, let's say, or, oh my gosh, that's what I do. That's where I put something. That's how I put it away in a box or whatever. They don't have that. So then I have to look at them, look at their learning processes, and be like, okay, well, they hear really well. They understand things really well. So I have to use, let's say, their auditory sense and be like, all right, so your lesson is not going to be based on a picture going with the words. You're going to listen to things. We might listen twice. And I should modify that, because visual picture, okay, they might not use, but I might, let's say there's a bird. And so I might add feathers to it, like a tactile component, if they have a strong sense of touch. I use the other senses is what I'm basically trying to hit. And so then they're like, oh, they're talking about a bird. And then we will make a specialized picture and they'll feel it as they're reading it. And so then the brain can understand it from that viewpoint and not rely on the vision part. But again, we have to look at different ways and the learning style of the student and rely on their other senses.
Okay, you said something just a minute ago that mm-hmm. I really have never understood. And it's back from Helen Keller. And that is, you work with people who are blind and deaf.
Yes.
Now, how does one integrate mm-hmm. into this world, which is all about seeing and mm-hmm. hearing, when you have no idea what seeing and hearing means? How does that person function in this world?
It's a challenge, I'm not going to lie. it's gotten better mm-hmm. because people are more aware of things now and things are more accessible. But when you can't see and hear, you basically, it is hard because a lot of it, they don't have a reference point, right? So you just do the best you can mm-hmm. and you focus on, again, what they are able to do and you work from there. For example, let's say they have to go to the store. Right. So what you do, I've done this a lot of times too. I'm also an orientation mobility specialist. So I help them, let's say, plan travel. And if you see them walking around with their cane or you see someone in a store mm-hmm. with a cane, I do that work as well. So let's say someone who's deafblind needs to go to a store. So we would make what's called a tactile map. Right. And you would map out the store and they'd keep feeling it and feeling it and be like, okay. And I'm not fluent in American Sign Language. I should be, but mm-hmm. I'm not. Because again, I have very few deafblind students. Yeah, I know I should be. I'm not going to lie. That's like the next thing for Miss Leanne.
Okay.
I am fluent in Braille, but not ASL. But yes, so you basically work with what they have and try to work around it. And again, not everyone's going to understand it. And you do have to work on life skills with a lot of them and let them know that not everyone is going to be cool. A lot of people are, some aren't, but you work with what they have. And again, with the store example, like tactile map, mm-hmm. figuring out where things are at the store, and then you walk them, you go with them to the store and have them feel the map again. And you go in the store. So they correlate, oh, okay, this is not some weird thing I'm feeling. You know, and there's a lot of explanation and repetition and over and over.
Can the people who are, mm-hmm. you know, blind and deaf, they mm-hmm. live on their, can they live on their own and get and do things well, or do they need someone to help them constantly, or how does that work?
It depends on the individual. I should clarify, even though people have labels of being legally blind, they still, a lot of times they still have some vision. Like you were saying, you can still, like your glasses are off, right?
Right.
You can still see shapes and colors. So same with them. You know, sometimes they can see some things. It might be blurry. They might not be able to see, like I was saying, peripheral fields, but they might be central. Mm-hmm. Same with when you can't hear as well. Hard of hearing. Sometimes they can hear certain sounds, certain pitches, not others. It depends on the degree.
Okay.
It also depends. And again, this is individualized. You have to look at the person if there's other issues going on with the body and their mental capacity too. Because sometimes some of these kiddos have really, really decreased mental capacities. Mm-hmm. So it depends on their abilities. And there are programs that teach them. California School for the Blind, California School for the Deaf have wonderful programs that teach them life skills. Because there's so, I can teach some in a classroom, but I only have them 6 hours a day.
Okay.
And not even that long. It depends on how long I can pull them from class too. If they're, you know, there's that. So there are specialized programs. So some of them can to a degree. I mean, they may not be able to make like a gourmet meal, but they could like slap together a sandwich or whatever, like, okay. Do what they basics to get where they need to go. But again, it depends on the individual too.
You just reminded me of something. I had a guest on mm-hmm. way back and mm-hmm. And she was blind. And I didn't realize until she actually said it that there mm-hmm. are different degrees of blindness.
Yes.
And,
mm-hmm.
and it's not when someone says you're blind, it's like there's nothing there. There's often uh-huh. something there and you can learn to deal with that. So thanks for reminding all of us about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is that is, I was thinking blind, can't see, hear, can't hear. How do you get around? But yeah.
Exactly. Degree. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about the families of the special needs individuals. Like, what's a common struggle that special needs families like face?
There's a few. A lot of the times, misunderstanding from the general public. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, I've seen them get really embarrassed when we'll go to a store or do like a store lesson because they're so afraid of what other people think of their child, right? And that they'll be, which I get, and that they'll be judged, and they're afraid that someone might call CPS on them or blah, 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 you know, because they're not understanding what's going on. So that's a lot of it. Especially parents, I've seen parents with autistic children, right? Mm-hmm. Child might have a meltdown in a store, but John Q. Public doesn't know why. Like, they haven't seen everything that's happened before, what has triggered the child. They just see what's going on right there. And the parent freaks out like, oh my God, what are these people going to think? Blah, 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 you know? So that's a big one. Just people, how much they're judged and people's misconceptions of what they do and what they don't do. That's a huge, huge one. And another one, a lot of my parents feel pressured when we're in what the IEP process, the individualized education plan, when we all meet with the different providers, right? Every year, and we sit down and discuss ways to help their child. A lot of them feel pressured, not by me, and I am going to qualify that, but by other caregivers, because a lot of them will come in and the intent is good, but I have seen some with so much hubris, like, well, I'm so-and-so, I have this title, I know what's best for your child, period. Mm-hmm. You know, and as a parent, it's, you deal with so much, God bless these people every day, just trying to get their kid up, trying to get the kid to school, right, dress, the whole thing. And then you have someone coming and going, no, you have to do boom, boom, boom for my child. And it can be really intimidating. And so a lot of them will back down. And even though they may not agree with the goal, they may not agree with certain things, they'll be totally quiet because they're so intimidated and just so shocked and overwhelmed that the lack of compassion towards their child, that they will just, like, I've seen them shut down meetings. And I know these people because I work so much with their child one-to-one. I really get to know the families and the parents. And to be honest with you, I'll sit there and go, that's not what they're thinking. That's not how they feel. Like, I know, but I'm not them. I can't say anything. And I'm like, ah.
What age do you usually start with the children? Otherwise, there's some, I'm guessing most kids that you're working with are born with a disability. Or is it something that manifests and you catch them like in first, second, third grade? What ages are they? And how long have the parents been dealing with it alone and those sorts of things?
Yeah. That's a common thing too, real quick. A lot of them aren't aware of the help that's out there. And a lot of them take on the struggle by themselves and not realizing there is a village there for them to help them raise a child. I forgot your question. I'm sorry. I totally
blanked. I want to know, like, when do they come into the system, your system, where they can receive care? How long do the parents have to deal with it beforehand?
Yes. For me, I deal with kids ages 3 to 22 years old, and I'll explain that in a minute about the 22-year-old. It can be acquired, or it can be, their disability can be congenital. Mm-hmm. What I mean by acquired is it can come on, like, let's say, God forbid, they're in an accident, right? And something happens where they lose a vision at that point. Or it can be something that is inherited, depending. I deal with both. I have this one young lady. She just got on my caseload, and I'm going to try not to cry when I say this, because this poor girl, totally healthy, totally functioning, and then she had like 3 strokes in a row.
Whoa.
Yes. So it affected her entire body. And now this kid, her speech has come back a bit. She's had some vision come back, but this was like a fully functioning A+ student, had all these colleges after her. And now, like, she had to relearn how to go to the bathroom. She had to relearn how to walk, you know, I mean, night and day. So there's that I've dealt with, and her IEP, I bring boxes of tissues to our IEP meetings, because it gets you in the heart. It really does.
How do you deal with all of this? Because it is, each story is like, I mean, it's personal, right? And you take care of all this stuff. how's your mental health? How do you feel? How do you deal with all this?
It's not easy. I do take a lot of walks during my day. I have a good support team for me personally when things are hard. Because I've been doing it so long, and I hope this doesn't sound cold on my part, but I've learned somewhat to emotionally detach, not completely. When I'm at work, I'm 100% there. I'm there for my kids. Boom. But when I leave, I go from Miss Leanne to Leanne. Okay. And my life. And it's not easy, and you can't always do it. And yeah, I mean, it is hard, and you just kind of have to mentally tell yourself, okay, now I'm me, you know, I like to go on walks, like a nature walk, take care of my adulting at home, do things that way. And I have a long commute home, so it kind of helps me just decompress in the car. And then I'll listen to some of, I have a couple of mental health podcasts I listen to and things that just help me kind of de-escalate of that nature. So that, but it's not easy. I'm not going to lie. It's not. You have to have a lot of patience.
I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. Look, I want to do two things here. One is there's like all of us, you know, sometimes have to go to just the regular doctor, the regular dentist, say, eye appointment, those sorts of things. Right. And how, in your case, people are looking for a doctor that can help them with their child or even maybe themselves, depending on their functionality.
Right.
It's kind of a double question here. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that you've seen other counselors like yourself who really shouldn't be doing this job. And how would somebody who is looking for a good person to help them weed out the bad from the good? Because like you said, there's like embarrassment, there's you don't know. So how does one do that?
First and foremost, trust your gut. Mm-hmm. Because if you inside, when you meet someone, right, and no matter who you are, okay, when you meet someone, you get a feeling like, I don't know, or whatever, right? Or you have a good feeling. Trust it, first and foremost. And if they are really listening to you as the parent and they really, really want to understand where you're coming from, they're not like, okay, well, boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. You know that that's a professional. I mean, yes, you can look them up online, right? And you can look up doctors and you can look up things that way and see other people's responses. And maybe if you have friends who go to the same doctor, talk to them. You know, there are parent support groups you can talk to as well and hear other people's feedback. But always, first and foremost, if your gut's telling you something's wrong, trust it and be like, nope, okay, next one.
Okay.
And also, see, I have had parents and I've asked to, and I've called up doctor's offices where you can take a tour beforehand. Especially with a lot of my kiddos, preparation is key. So you're not, especially if you can't really see, and then all of a sudden you have something coming at you. It's like, wait, what? Right. So
right.
A lot of that, and see how receptive they are to that as well. Cause there is your knowledge about something from book learning. And then there's also people skills. And if you can find someone with a marriage of both, then you're golden.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, it's a tough thing. And
is
this a situation where insurance covers things, or do people have to pay out of their pocket for the services?
That's a good question. Now, for me, from the educational standpoint, with free and appropriate public education with federal funding, the equipment that we get is federally funded. So that's not an issue. But in terms of some of the medical issues on the medical side, some things they pay for, some they don't. It's like insurance for everybody. It depends on your program and your carrier, et cetera, et cetera. And some students who are on Medi-Cal, things might not get paid. They might, you know, I don't quite deal with that part as much since I'm on the educational side. But from the educational standpoint, they don't have to worry about paying for things. Like we can get the equipment, we can do everything.
Yeah, it's interesting because you always hear like, you know, if you've got some sort of malady going on with you, you know, it's like you should like get two opinions. That never happens because who's going to pay for that? And after you're into one person, you're kind of stuck there for just a little bit. So how do you get that second opinion for your child? How do you happen? For anyone, how does that happen?
Yeah, it is hard. It is. I always tell the parents, again, do what's right for you. You know, I said, they're not living with you. They're not dealing with things on the day-to-day basis. You are. And especially in the educational world, parents have the power. And I don't think a lot of them realize that, again. And they'll be like, what someone says, they'll be like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, even if they disagree. And I'm like, no, you have the power. If you disagree, you say no. Like, a lot of teachers won't tell them this, right? They'll just be like, oh, okay, well, the teacher said that, but look,
yeah, that happens a lot, right? Because it's like, they're the expert. Well, maybe they know and I'm doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm going for. Mm-hmm. I want to do something with you. I want to learn more about Miss Leanne. Uh-oh. And then we're going to play a little game. We're going to play a little game here called This or That. Okay. And basically, I'm going to give you two choices. You can choose one or the other, but not neither or both. And if you have to explain something, we can do that too.
Okay, not neither or both. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Let's start easy and we'll get a little bit tougher as we go, maybe. Okay. And let's just see where it all goes.
Okay.
And you interpret the questions however you want. So, indoor or outdoor teaching?
Outdoor.
Okay. Well, early childhood education or young adult education?
Oh God, I can only pick one. I guess early childhood.
Yeah. You can explain if you like.
Okay. No, I like both because I work with both. And I mean, I like every aspect of what I do. Oh, because I work 3 to 22, and that's what I wanted to explain. And for people who don't know, with my kiddos, if they're not able to do a regular school curriculum, let's say in high school, you don't have to graduate. You can get a certificate. And if you go that route, you can stay in the system till you're 22 and then move on to an adult care program from there. So I like both. But in this case, I said early childhood because I can help with literacy skills.
Gotcha. So. That makes sense. I need to do a whole show on literacy skills and text.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Lord.
Yeah. How about structured learning or free form learning?
Free form.
Individual learning or group activities?
Oh, that's a hard one. Individual.
Okay. How about traditional classroom or specialized classroom?
Specialized.
Okay. And when does somebody move into the traditional classroom with their peers and all that?
Yeah, you know, that depends, especially with special ed. We try to do everything first before moving someone into special ed, if possible. Okay. So we have what's called the least restrictive environment. So the place where they're going to learn best, and we might do modifications like extra time on tests, larger print, things of that nature. And then if it's not working, they move into special ed. Okay. But at the same point, if someone's in special ed and they're doing extremely well and they're thriving and they don't need services anymore, then they will basically be exited out of special ed and go back into general ed.
Gotcha. How about physical activity or art therapy for stress relief?
Art therapy.
Yes. I think everyone should be artful.
Oh my God. Even if you just like rip up paper and make a picture out of it or something, that is so therapeutic.
Yep.
So yeah.
Okay. You talked about IEPs earlier, the individualized education plan meeting. Necessary or burdensome?
Necessary.
Okay. Theory-driven approaches or experience-driven approaches in special education?
Experience-driven.
Yeah. I'm torn on this one. I want to see what you say here. Therapy dogs or therapy art for students?
I can't say both. Therapy dogs.
Yeah. I think I love jocks. We had the conversation earlier with backstage, you and me, about cats and dogs and how they just don't judge and they love.
Yes, they're the best because I've seen it with children too. Some of the school sites I go to, they have therapy dogs, and it's just amazing how these kids who might be quiet or shy all of a sudden open up and just, it's amazing. Yeah.
I agree. Pets are essential.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Focus on academic skills or life skills for special needs children?
Life skills.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In terms of assistive technology, about mm-hmm. an empowering tool or a challenging necessity?
Empowering tool.
Okay. Like, give us an example of an empowering tool.
Well, it's really interesting because assistive technology can be anything from a pen, to be honest mm-hmm. with you, to some highly computerized something, you know. It just depends on the child and their needs. But my personal experience, if you give someone something that's too technology-based and it's hard mm-hmm. to operate, it's going to collect dust in a corner, won't be used, and then you've wasted money on something. As opposed to doing, and this is kind of funny, but I do things a little bit more old school sometimes, but it's something everyone understands. It works. It's easy. There you go. You know?
Okay.
So
I got you on that one. Mm-hmm. How about, okay, in regards to special education laws, are they adequate or need more work?
It depends on which one.
Okay.
But for the most part, they're pretty adequate. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Biggest influencer in special education, parental advocacy or government policy?
Parental advocacy.
Yeah. I from just our discussion, mm-hmm. I hear you talking about parents needing to take their power and being able to understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's more impactful for societal understanding, real life interaction with special needs individuals or media representation?
Real life interaction.
Yeah. That when somebody runs into someone who is special needs,
mm-hmm.
How should they interact with that person? Because a lot of people just like look the other way. A lot of mm-hmm. people are afraid to talk. How should that interaction go?
The same as you would interact with anybody else. Mm-hmm. They're human. First and foremost, they are human. And so, I mean, you might, okay. So I've seen some people in the store, and I do this too. I do hang back for a second. And I look and I see, all right, are they, because you don't know if they're deaf, right? Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to be rude. So you might hold back for a minute, or if you see someone with them, be like, hey, how are you? How's your day? And see if the child interacts or be like, are you cool with me saying hi? Or you might want to ask, but always realize they're human, be kind, and be treated how you want to be treated, right? Because that goes a long way. Just the fact, this is why I've been successful for so long, because I treat my students like people. They're not a label. They're not this. No, you're Michael. You're David. You're John. You know, that's you. You might have some challenges, but so don't we all.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. I got one more for you. So the primary role of special education teacher, an mm-hmm. educator first or an advocate first?
Oh God, I can't pick both. Actually, in my case, it's advocate.
Okay.
Because that is part of what I do. Like, this is part of what I do, is to get the word out there, to get the knowledge out there. That is part of my job. Yes, education is part of it, but first and foremost is to advocate for these students and their families, and the rest follows under that. So
that's awesome. People mm-hmm. need to stay in touch with you, Ms. Leanne.
Yes.
So we've got your podcast at swellcast.com/, and I'm going to spell this out for everyone who's just listening. For everyone who's watching on the screen, it looks like thems.leanne. But mm-hmm. it's actually the Ms. Leanne, and it's C-H-E-M-S. So it looks like one word, thems.
Yeah.
dot Leanne, L-E-A-N-N-E, the Ms. Leanne. So mm-hmm. That's on Swellcast, swellcast.com, mm-hmm. the Ms. Leanne. And then you also are on Twitter at the only Leanne.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which one's easier for people to get in touch with you? I guess through Twitter so they can contact you?
Yes. Yes, okay. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. I'm going to leave that on the screen so people can see it. Twitter at the, I guess it's X now. I'm not sure of what.
Yeah, it's really weird because it depends. Like, I was reading about this, right? Like, if you have Apple, it doesn't totally recognize everything. So like, it'll say X, but then if you like hit it on the app, it'll still have like the Twitter bird on there. It's like totally weird. So I was reading about that going, okay, I don't know.
Yeah, but, my phone somehow got rid of the bird, and I've got a big X on my screen now.
Yeah. So. I don't know, Elon Musk, you're a trip. That's all I have to say on that one. That's it.
Everybody, thank you for being here. Ms. Leanne, thank you for being here.
Thank you. And, thank you.
Hopefully we'll see you again in the future. Goodbye.
I hope so. Bye. Thank you.